A couple of years ago, in my local patch newspaper, online newspaper, an article came out. They talked about how you could use adult Easter egg hunts to spice up Easter. Because Easter is so boring that we need to spice it up a little bit. And when you read this article, when you read that headline, you get the feeling that this person does not understand what Easter is about and so has assumed that it's irrelevant. So long as we all have to go through the motions of Easter, we might as well make it fun so it's not so boring for all of us, because this old, irrelevant holiday is such a doldrum. You know what I mean? So they wrote an entire article on ways you can spice up Easter with different suggestions for adult Easter egg hunts. Now, the Easter egg comes from the pagan tradition of the spring festival, the festival of rebirth. And in the springtime, we see lots of eggs, we see lots of chicks, we see little baby bunny rabbits, because that's what animals do in the springtime. And the egg is a symbol looking like a lifeless stone that later hatches open. You come to find that it's empty and the life has run off cheeping and peeping and being super cute and fluffy. It's a perfect parallel. It's a perfect metaphor for Easter and life and rebirth and life and death and the empty tomb. So it was a natural merging to incorporate Easter eggs and little baby bunnies into the concept of Easter. So many, many years ago, too many to count, I was a college student, still very wet behind the ears, and I ended up landing a job as a night manager at my student union. Now, this was a huge building. It was about 4 stories tall if you included the game room that was in the basement all the way up to the ballroom that was at the top story. And it included a cafeteria, many administrative offices, all of the student clubs and organizations. It included a game room, an arcade, a ballroom that hosted huge events, and so on. And it was my job to be there on the weekends and make sure that nothing went awry. And it also incorporated an art gallery, and one of my jobs was to sort of monitor that. Now, the art was all alarmed, okay? Just like modern galleries. If you stepped over a certain line that was too close to the art, it would set off an alarm. And if you touched any of the art, it would set off an alarm. So, at one point, first time ever, the alarm went off while it was my shift. Now, this did not happen very often. Okay, I think it only happened once or twice during my entire 4 years there. So the alarm goes off. Now imagine your alarm clock, right? Beep, 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 this kind of shrill, shrieking noise. That's what it sounded like, but it was so loud that you could hear it for blocks away. So when this thing went off, it went off. So I hear the alarm, and I had a little pin code. You could go into a back room, there was a panel on the wall, much like home alarm systems, and you punch in the code, and the alarm will turn off. So I ran in, and I pushed the code, and the buttons did not respond. They didn't do beep, beep, beep like they normally do. So I punched in the code, and nothing happened. So, being the intelligent person that I like to think that I am, I tried it again. And a third time, and it still didn't work. So at that point, protocol dictated that I had to call in the Office of Public Safety, the on-campus security team that we had. Now, Office of Public Safety was abbreviated OPS, but because they generally tended to make situations worse, not better, whenever they arrived, we affectionately referred to them as OOPS. And these are the folks that I had to call to help me with this situation. So I called them. And I said, the alarm is going off in the building. The keypad is not responding to the code. I can't turn it off by myself. And they said, no problem. We will send someone out, they said. He will be there ETA 8 minutes. 8 minutes of listening to that alarm. Now, there were classes in session. And this thing could be heard for blocks. There were babies trying to have their nap several blocks away. 8 minutes, they said, it would take for him to get there. So Zechariah prophesied this triumphant entrance into Jerusalem. Zechariah lived in a time post-exile, but pre-Second Temple. This is after the time that Jerusalem had been destroyed, the temple had been destroyed, and everybody had been kicked out and sent out and away. They had been forcibly removed, and we had the diaspora. And then King Cyrus of Persia came in, and he overthrew the Babylonians, and he said that everybody could go home. So long as they didn't do anything to, like, rebel or start a war or anything, they could live in peace, they could govern themselves, they could rebuild their temples, and they could return home. No problem. And Zechariah lived right in this time period, and he knew what a challenge that would be. As much as it was a good thing, he knew it would be a very difficult thing, because we had had members of the same family living apart for about 60 years at this point. Now, if anybody knows what it's like to suddenly move back in with family, we know what kind of challenges that presents. Imagine doing it with an entire nation all at the same time. Everybody moves back in with mom and dad. That would cause some tensions. Okay? Having everybody trying to live back in the city, trying to rebuild the temple, trying to agree on what that would look like, how to reconcile, and how to rebuild society from scratch, from the ground up, keeping in mind that all of the people that were rebuilding the society were the same ones that let it fall apart in the first place. This presents unique challenges, and so he has this prophecy of what it would look like to have someone unexpected come in. To have someone come in, not in an army, we'd done that, right? They had done that, and see how far that got them exiled. So he envisions the Messiah coming in humbly, on a donkey, not on a horse, not on an elephant, but on a donkey, not with an army, by himself. Because the only thing that was going to solve old problems was something new. Trying the same thing over and over again, like pushing in the keypad over and over and over again, was not going to solve the problem. And everybody knew there was a problem, just like this giant alarm going off that could be heard for blocks around. Everybody knew there was a problem. The question is, what are you going to do to fix it? Trying the same old thing again and again wasn't going to work. And so he envisions this anti-hero, a hero that doesn't look like any hero they've ever seen before. So, the first suggestion for the Easter egg hunt for grown-ups, play in the dark, it says. For obvious reasons such as safety and early bedtimes, Easter egg hunts are usually done during the day. But with an adult egg hunt, boost the level of difficulty and give everyone a flashlight to search for eggs in the dark. Yeah, we could have Easter egg hunts in the dark with just grown-ups after bedtime. That'll make Easter so much more relevant. So, the officer arrives, and he's got some swagger to him. Can I tell you? He has some swagger. He's got his uniform. He's got all this stuff around his belt and clipped all over him. He comes in, a little swagger. Looks at me, 19 years old, and he kind of, even though he was about this much shorter than me, as most people are when I'm in heels, he still managed to look down his nose at me. I don't know how he did that. It was amazing. And he says, so I understand you got a little alarm problem? Cheep, 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 cheep. Everybody knows we have a little alarm problem. And he says, well, did you try punching in the code? Yeah, I tried punching in the code. Well, why don't you let me try it, he says. So I give him the code, and he pushes the buttons, and there's no response. So he pushes them again. And a third time. No response. He goes, that's odd. That should have worked, he says. So he gets on his radio that he has strapped to himself, and he says, yeah, the keypad doesn't appear to be responding. I think I'm going to need some backup on this. No problem. We'll send your superior out. ETA, 10 minutes. 10 minutes. 10 more minutes to wait for someone to come out to help solve this problem. And I said, well, have you thought? And I was shushed. No. We just wait. It's protocol. We know what to do in these situations. It's the same thing we've done many, many times before. So Jesus coming into Jerusalem and people throwing their cloaks down and waving palms had happened multiple times before. This is not the first time that someone had come into Jerusalem amid pomp and circumstance. King Jehu, was brought into Jerusalem under much pomp and circumstance to overthrow Ahab and Jezebel, effectively getting rid of the Sidonians. And when he came in after being anointed, they threw down their palms, they threw down their cloaks. There was a big old battle, and he took over. That's how you enter Jerusalem. King David, when he brought the ark into Jerusalem, he had an entourage. Do you remember? Singing, dancing, tambourines, the ark on this gigantic wagon as they're bringing it in. That's how you make an entrance into Jerusalem when you're conquering, when you're taking over, when you're going to set up shop. Simon, in the story of Maccabees, was going to overthrow the Greeks that were oppressing the Jewish people. And when he comes into Jerusalem, they also waved palms and threw down cloaks. And he came out on a war horse, like a knight in shining armor, sword held high. That's how you have a triumphant entry into Jerusalem. So people knew when they heard that Jesus was coming, when they heard that this guy was coming to save them, they knew what to do. They got out the palms, they got out the cloaks, and they made ready, because that's what they'd done every time before. They were ready for someone to come in and overthrow the Romans. So, suggestion number two. Everyone likes small chocolates, but why not make this more grown-up themed? Instead of chocolates, why don't you try mini bottles of liquor? Lottery tickets or even gift cards would make great gifts. See now, where's our ministry team? Where's Kathy? She's the one putting on the Easter egg hunt come Sunday. Why don't we, instead of hiding little eggs filled with non-sugary treats for the kids, let's fill them with baby bottles of booze and lottery tickets. That'll spice up Easter a little more, right? Liquor, gambling, and cash. Liquor, gambling, and cash in a children's game. That will definitely make things more exciting. So when, have you guys seen the movie Shrek? We're all familiar with the movie Shrek. It's a wonderful story because it's an unfairy tale. They take all of the standard things that happen in fairy tales and they turn them on their heads. They turn them right on their heads. There's a wonderful scene where Fiona, the princess, has been locked in a tower, guarded by a fire-breathing dragon in the middle of a tiny island surrounded by molten lava for her whole life. And Shrek comes in to rescue her. Now, she has had multiple knights come to rescue her before, and none of them ever made it, right? As Shrek is coming in, he's seeing that the castle is littered with the bodies of all of the knights that had come in before he came in. And he's a little unorthodox, as we know. And so he manages to get around the dragon without waking it up, get all the way to the top of the tower, and find her. Right? None of the others made it that far before. But he does things in an unorthodox way. And so he gets her, and he's going to take her down the back way. And she starts questioning this methodology, and she says, "What are you doing? You know, you should sweep me off my feet out yonder window and down a rope onto your valiant steed." And he says, "You've had a lot of time to plan this, haven't you?" Well, she's also seen all of the other knights and read all the fairy tales that say that's how it's done. And then, amidst all of this, Donkey wakes up the dragon. You remember Donkey accidentally wakes up the dragon, and the dragon roars. And Fiona hears this as they're trying to make their escape, and she says, "You didn't slay the dragon?" And he says, "It's on my to-do list." Now come on. And she says, but this isn't right. She puts her foot down and refuses to budge and says, but this isn't right. You're meant to charge in, sword drawn, banners flying. That's what all the other knights did. That's what all the other knights did. And he says, yeah, right before they burst into flame. So when Jesus came into Jerusalem, he did everything wrong. He forgot to bring his own donkey. He forgot the war horse. Instead of coming in on a war horse covered in armor and all that regalia, he came in on a donkey that wasn't even his own. Instead of coming in with an army, he came in with a ragtag group of apostles that he had picked up here and there. Paul called them the plate scrapings, the leftovers. This is who he came in with. And instead of a sword lifted high, he came in with empty hands so that he could use them to heal people, to break bread with people, and to teach people how to love. So here are the other suggestions for Easter egg hunts. If you're having a family gathering for Easter, you could write various prizes or tasks on a piece of paper to hide inside eggs. One person might luck out and get the first plate of food, while someone else might get tasked with dish duty. Or get a variety of beers and turn it into a craft beer hunt. Get a variety of beers, remove the labels, and wrap them in Easter-themed construction paper or ribbon. Hide the bottles around your yard, and the adults who find them get to drink them. Now, I know some of us have played that game, right? Desperately hunting for your beer in the dark. We have played that game. How many of us have played that game? Come on. One person. Yeah, right. Y'all are a bunch of liars. So, we have played that game. But this idea of getting a prize that allows you to eat before everybody else gets to eat is, well, to turn people into the haves and the have-nots, this is the opposite. This is exactly why Easter is so relevant, is because people still think like this. That it's fun. That it's fun to play games where some people get to have and others do not. Where holy holidays get to be turned into drinking games. We've done it with just about every holiday. St. Patrick's Day, we're supposed to be celebrating a saint. Let's all just hunt for beer in the dark, but we'll make it green. Fourth of July, that's when domestic violence goes sky high because there's so much drinking on this holiday where we're supposed to be celebrating liberation. And now we're doing it with Easter too. When we're trying to celebrate a holiday about finding new solutions to old problems, where we're talking about human-sized problems that have continued throughout history that we cannot solve on our own. Hunger, poverty, environmental destruction. When we're talking about oppression of people because of the color of their skin, because of their ethnicity, because of their religion. When we're talking about wars, when we're talking about children dying unnecessarily, we can all do our best to change this, and Christ teaches us how to do it by feeding people, by helping people, by loving people, by re-envisioning a society, and by trusting that what we cannot do on our own, there is a God bigger than us that will show us a better way, that will give us unorthodox solutions to very common and pervasive and pernicious problems. Easter is one of the most relevant holidays that we have. So, Easter and Palm Sunday happened around Passover. Did you know that? It happened around Passover. Passover starts on Friday. It's the same day that we have Good Friday. And it happened on Passover, and that's not accidental, because it was a time when everyone was coming to Jerusalem, and they were having all of these connections, and they were talking about remembering what it was like being in Egypt. They were talking about remembering that God had promised them a better life. They were talking about what it was like to rebuild, to examine themselves, to remember the society that God laid out for them and all of the information that he gave to Moses as to how societies should function. And when they're remembering Exodus, they're remembering a time when there was a problem that was so huge, being under Pharaoh's thumb, so huge, being under threat of death, so huge, being enslaved and being unable to leave when they wanted to leave, so huge, being disenfranchised and having different and lesser rights than other people that lived in that country, so huge that they could not solve it themselves. And they had to rely on a God that would come up with unorthodox solutions to get them out, to allow them to heal, to allow them to rebuild, and to allow them to create a better society. And when I say unorthodox solutions, I mean unorthodox solutions. Raining frogs down from the sky. Rivers of blood. Parting a sea to allow people to go through, and then bringing it back together to drown the pursuing army. Can I say, thinking outside the box? Unorthodox solutions. And if we think that these problems aren't still happening, they're still happening. When we think of the anti-gay legislation that was just passed in Indiana, where some people are allowed to use the services of publicly owned businesses and others are not, in the book of Revelation, it talks about the mark of the beast, which is a direct reference to Roman law, which said that all of the Israelites had to have a certain mark that would allow them to buy and sell and own businesses, and they couldn't do it. The Romans could do it. They could not. When we hear about the violence perpetrated on the 57-year-old Indian grandfather who had come from India to visit his new grandchild and help out, and the police officers stopped him because someone called in that he looked funny and he just didn't look like he should belong in that neighborhood, and they ended up throwing him to the ground and paralyzing him. Paralyzing him. He came out to visit his newborn grandchild, and he is now in a hospital relearning how to walk. We cannot help but think that this is exactly what happened to Christ, arrested and beaten for no reason. And when we think about what Nestle is doing, have we heard about Nestle? I just found out that Nestle is taking all the water from Sacramento. They're paying the same amount the public pays, 65 cents for 470 gallons. And they're putting it into bottles and marketing it under 17 different brand names. So 65 cents gets them 470 gallons. And then they sell those for $1.59. And we have a massive drought in Sacramento. We have a drought in California. And all of the water that people could have access to is being taken away and then sold back to them for exorbitant rates. The Book of Lamentations tells us that's exactly what the Assyrians did during the exile. The people lament that they have to pay for their own firewood and they have to pay for their own water in their own homeland where they have been living for the past several hundred years. The problems remain the same. Our reliance and our need for a God to show us unorthodox solutions has not changed. So, when the people shouted, "Hosanna, Hosanna, save us in the highest heavens." Hosanna means save us. They were expecting Christ to come in guns a-blazing and overthrow the Roman government and yet again, for the fourth time, liberate the city. Because that's what you do. That's what they expected. That's what history told them. And it didn't work. And he didn't do that. Instead, he came in with a completely unorthodox approach. He said, if you have two cloaks and your neighbor has none, give one of the cloaks to the neighbor. If you have twice as much food as you need and your neighbor has none, give some of that food to the neighbor. Let's all sit down together and look each other in the eye and see each other as people and break bread together, he said. If you're angry at someone, forgive them. Let it go. Stop carrying grudges and resentments that build up to a national level and result in wars. If you break something, fix it. If you hurt someone, make it right. It's so simple. Not easy, but very, very simple. That's completely different from the idea of might makes right. So, the second and then the third officer make their triumphant entry into this back room. And by triumphant, I mean with more and more swagger each time. And you can tell their level of importance because they had more stuff around their belt that rattled when they walked in. And they all did the exact same thing. For 25 minutes, this went on. As they are continuing to ask me for the code and try to punch it in when I have repeatedly said, but the keypad isn't responding. We are in crisis. The alarm system is so loud, everybody can tell there's a problem. And the keypad isn't responding. The old way isn't responding. And I had three officers standing next to me, all completely befuddled. They had no idea what to do next. And I just looked at them and I said, is that all you have to offer? Which, let me tell you, I had to reach a certain level of frustration to get to that point because, you know, I recognized they were much more heavily armed than I was. And I said, is that all you have to offer? And they kind of looked at me and shrugged. And I said, well, then, would you be willing to let me try something different? And they looked at me, and to their credit, they shrugged again. Sure, they didn't love it, but they didn't know what else to do. And to their credit, instead of maintaining control over the situation, they let it go, even though they didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't even know what I was going to do. But there had to be something else besides this horrible situation, this ear-rending, screeching sound. And so I looked them in the eye, I reached up against the wall, and I ripped the control panel out of the wall. Boom! Off it came. And behind it, was a tiny, tiny switch that said on, off. And it was set to on. And it was red. And I switched it down to off. And the alarm went silent. After 25 minutes, it went silent. It was a blessing, the relief, not to have this constant screeching, this high alert. Your body is in fight or flight the whole time because it's so loud and so alarming. Silence. Such a simple solution. Such a simple solution. Christ tells us such simple solutions for these old problems. And they're completely unorthodox. They're completely different. They're completely unheard of. But we have to be willing to trust that God will give us the unorthodox solutions if we will but rely on God to give them to us. Love your neighbor. Instead of hating, love them. Simple. Flip the switch. If someone's hungry, feed them. It's so simple. Flip the switch. If you're angry and resentful, let that anger go and forgive. So simple. Flip that switch. And we hold out hope that if the disciples, this ragtag, bumbling, confused set of plate scrapings could figure this out, maybe there's hope for us. If a bunch of officers and a college student in a closet together amidst this chaotic screeching sound could trust that there had to be something better and a willingness to rip off the obvious and see a much simpler solution behind it, where all the guns, all the radios, all the backup, all the officers were completely unnecessary. It's a very simple solution. is flip the switch. If they could figure it out, if I could figure it out, then there's hope. There's hope for the rest of us. Can I get an amen to that?